This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. For well over a decade, many scientists working to find a treatment for Alzheimer's disease have focused on the theory that a specific protein formed sticky plaques in the brain that were the primary cause of the disease. But allegations have surfaced about the influential results of a 2006 study that were the basis for that theory, calling into question the millions of dollars and countless hours that have been spent developing treatments focused on that cause. Joining me to discuss these allegations and what they mean for this important work are the reporter whose six-month investigation brought these concerns to light, Science Magazine investigative journalist Charles Piller. Welcome, Charles.
Thanks very much for having me on the show.
And University of Cincinnati professor of neurology and UC health physician, Dr. Alberto Espe. Thank you for being here, Dr. Espe.
Very happy to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
UC Health is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. And if you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call at 419-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. Dr. Espe, I'd like to start with you. The 2006 study that I referenced identified the amyloid beta star 56, a subtype of the amyloid beta protein, as the cause of memory loss in rats. Can you tell us just a little bit about that theory?
Yeah, the theory comes from the idea that the proteins that accumulate in the brain of individuals who go on to develop Parkinson's, or in this case, Alzheimer's disease, are toxics, that they somehow are going to create inflammation and a variety of the issues to the brain, and the brain will then begin to degenerate. It's referred to as the amyloid hypothesis. And what happens, though, is that over the years, the amyloid plaques have been shown not to correlate very well with the degeneration, nor to be that closely tied into Alzheimer's in the manner that we would expect, meaning that anybody who would develop the plaques would develop dementia. That turns out not to be the case. So as we age, we accrue these amyloid plaques, and what happens is by the age of 85 years, which is beyond a normal lifespan, 60% of us will have these amyloid plaques, and yet only 10% of us will have dementia. So that's prevalence 5 times lower than predicted if amyloid were toxic. So what happened is that the theory that has been proposed as a way to salvage the gain of function, as it's been referred to, the gain of function toxic idea about Alzheimer's, is that if it is not the amyloid plaques what create the toxicity, it's the in-between thing. Now, remember that proteins begin normal. That's all of us have normal proteins in our brains. These are the kinds of structures that help our brain be what it is, and it help the neurons communicate to one another. So the brain is filled with the normal proteins. One of the most important ones is amyloid beta. And this protein is normal. We need it. Obviously, couldn't be the cause of the problem. And when it is exposed to something in the brain that shouldn't be there, such as a virus, for instance, it actually undergoes a transformation from its normal soluble state. Soluble means it can be dissolved in water and therefore measured in the liquid that we can get out of a spinal tap, for instance. It becomes insoluble. So it's transformed from the normal state that is dissolved in water to an abnormal insoluble state. It's a solid, and that's the amyloid plaque. Well, if it's not the amyloid plaques what we can conceive of as the cause of Alzheimer's, nor the normal protein, it must be the in-between. The in-between are these oligomers, which were popularized as the cause of the dementia in the early 200s, and particularly given a lot of strength in this Nature 2006 paper that Charles Spiller nicely reported recently, to note that the findings reported there may have been manipulated. Now,
I'd like to stop you there because I want to get to Charles. You launched this 6-month investigation into that 2006 study and kind of raised some very important questions about that. Help us understand how you launched that investigation and how important this 2006 study has been in the field of Alzheimer's research.
Sure. So I initially was looking at a different set of studies. This was associated with a experimental drug called simufilam that is produced by a company called Cassava Sciences. And this has been a bit of a controversy. It's been in the news a bit as an experimental drug that some scientists have questioned the efficacy of and also have questioned some of the science behind it. So when I jumped into that story, it was through a contact with a whistleblowing scientist. His name is Matthew Schrag, and he was at the time when I began to do my reporting, not known in the field as someone who was looking into these problems. He's a junior professor at Vanderbilt University, and he's a neurologist and a physician and has been studying Alzheimer's disease. What he noticed in association with people who were challenging the Cassava Sciences drug is a number of what appeared to be falsified images in scientific papers that were supporting the research behind that, the development of that drug. And he was paid funds by a lawyer representing scientists who were questioning this, who were also what they call short sellers. They're people who earn money when a stock goes down. They're betting on a stock to fail. And Cassava Sciences is a publicly traded company, so they were betting on that. And they all petitioned to FDA to halt the clinical trials of this drug. So that's how Matthew Schrag got involved. But in the course of his looking into this and his educating himself about the importance of how best to look at these images, scientific might have been falsified, he stumbled on research associated with this important 2006 study in Nature. Authors of this study, the primary authors are Sylvain Lesny and Karen Ash, who are scientists at the University of Minnesota. And when I started to look at this, he was first looking at other papers by Sylvain Lesny and noting that a number of the images in those papers appear in dubious. They looked like there were elements of them that might have been doctored in ways that could tend to support the hypothesis that Lesny and Ash were promoting. And this is related to this protein, a particular subtype of amyloid beta that we've been talking about earlier in this broadcast, that subtype called an oligomer. And this one they dubbed A-beta star 56. So we could call it star 56. And again, they prove this particular protein was directly associated with symptoms that resembled dementia in rats, and by injecting into rats. And so this was really important at the time, in part because it seemed to be the first proof that of a persistence that seemed to mimic Alzheimer's disease symptoms in animals. So very, very important, profound study that has since been cited thousands of times, actually the fifth most citations in scientific papers of any study, basic study about Alzheimer's disease in the scientific literature. So that was sort of a profound thing. And when Schrag was looking at this, he noticed that there were a number of images in this very important paper that also appeared to have been doctored. In other words, they looked like someone had used digital imaging software to move some portions of the image around to accentuate certain findings or to reduce certain contradictory information in the image. In other words, things that would tend to support the hypothesis even though the experimental results didn't tend to support them. Mm.
And I know your investigation was not based solely on his findings. Talk to us about how Science Magazine reached out to other image analysts to review those findings and see what they had to what they thought about them.
Yeah, thank you for asking that, because it's so critically important to do a thorough job of vetting the opinions of one quite brilliant, but also singular scientist who evaluated these images. So I went out to some of the leaders in Alzheimer's research, and that included people who were proponents of the amyloid hypothesis and skeptics, and people who were agnostic about it. I also went to forensic image analysts and asked their views of the quality of Matthew Schrag's analysis of these images. Every single expert I asked in both of those two different fields felt strongly that the analysis was compelling, that it was extremely well done, and that although they did not agree about every single image, because he evaluated more than 70 images from the body of work by Lesney and Ash, they agreed that in many, many, many cases that these images were showed clear signs of doctoring in ways that called into question the body of work. Hmm.
We're talking about allegations related to an influential study on Alzheimer's disease with the reporter whose six-month investigation brought these allegations to light, Science Magazine investigative journalist Charles Piller, and University of Cincinnati professor of neurology and UC health physician Dr. Alberto Espe. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment, and later in the program, we'll discuss the high level of job vacancies among Greater Cincinnati's healthcare institutions. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We continue our discussion about allegations related to an influential study on Alzheimer's disease with the reporter whose six-month investigation brought these allegations to light, Science Magazine investigative journalist Charles Piller, and University of Cincinnati professor of neurology and UC health physician Dr. Alberto Espe. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. Dr. Espe, we heard Charles talking about the concerns that were raised in these images and that 2006 study. Does this raise doubt in your mind about the whole plaque buildup theory? And I guess I wonder what you think this means for amyloid beta research overall.
Yeah, thanks for that question. It's actually interesting to note that the findings that were in that Nature 2006 article haven't really been replicated, and the whole theory of toxicity from oligomers has had really little support. Many studies would, when viewed without our age-old biases about what Alzheimer's is, be in fact against the hypothesis of oligomeric toxicity. So the data has not validated those results. And so what I find this report very, very helpful is in helping us get back to the roots of the idea. The idea had been there. This was strengthened dramatically by this particular report. And even though the results haven't been replicated, and even though oligomers as a source of toxicity haven't really been sufficiently validated, in fact, as I mentioned, thought not to be the problem, because it turns out that they come from levels of the normal proteins that are becoming less and less, lower and lower as the disease progresses. So it's very hard to assume something is toxic when the levels of it are actually coming down. So it probably will take for the field of Alzheimer's disease to reckon with not only the fact that the evidence subsequent to this very influential paper hasn't moved in that direction, but that the paper itself may have put the results in a manner that favored the hypothesis, despite the fact that even at the very beginning, the evidence wasn't there. So my hope would be that this would be the greatest incentive that we needed to take on in order to revisit what is it that we used as the reason for which Alzheimer's appears. We are in a point of reckoning, because we've had two decades worth of trying to demonstrate that toxicity comes from amyloid, and in fact having a very robust pipeline of therapies in many trials. Now we have over 40 trials of anti-amyloid therapies. None of them have actually provided any benefits. And in fact, people may not think about this, but in about 40% of the trials, those that were allocated to anti-amyloid therapies, in fact, worsened cognitively. And in many cases, their brains shrank further. So this idea, however compelling has been in terms of building the field of Alzheimer's disease around the toxicity or assumed toxicity of amyloid, is really overdue for a complete revisitation. And we need to think about our patients because they really need for us to not just simply be connected to an idea just because it's compelling. If nature, as Schrag in the Charles Pillars report noted, if nature is not what conceive of, what, you know, however beautiful our ideas are, if essentially they aren't true in nature, we can't fool it.
We did reach out to Dr. Lesne to invite him on for this discussion. He didn't respond, but a university spokesperson gave us this statement. Quote, the university is aware that questions have arisen regarding certain images used in peer-reviewed research publications authored by university faculty Karen Ash and Sylvan Lesne. The university will follow its processes to review the questions any claims have raised. At this time, we have no further information to provide. We also did reach out to Dr. Ash for an interview, and she declined our request. Charles, what happened when you reached out to Dr. Lesne and Dr. Ash?
Similar as the response they gave to you. Dr. Lesne did not respond to my request for comment. Dr. Ash did respond cryptically, defending her research, but refused to be interviewed or answer questions. I think it would be interesting to see what the response has been more generally since the article appeared. And if you don't mind, I'd like to explain that briefly.
Sure.
Initially, Dr. Ash called for the retraction of the Nature paper from 2006, and then later said that her co-authors refused to agree with her on retracting the paper. She has minimized the effects of the doctoring of images. She has minimized the number of suspect images associated with that study. And basically, as she has made the statement that it's lamentable that a colleague might have falsified research. And again, the colleague that she's referring to would have been Lesne. But it has no bearing on my ideas or the Nature paper. So I just want to say that it's both illogical and it is actually utter nonsense. I should add that some eminent Alzheimer's disease researchers who have based their careers on the importance of the amyloid hypothesis have reacted by saying that this finding by Lesne and Ash, we never took that very seriously. It has no bearing on the field. Basically, everything's fine. And I have to say, this is a complete misrepresentation of the obvious scientific record of the influence of this study. Thousands of citations. The opportunity cost when a lot of funding shifted in the direction of studying these types of amyloid proteins instead of some of the other possible causes of Alzheimer's, including some that Dr. Espe has mentioned. So to me, it's sort of a bewildering kind of response from some portions of the Alzheimer's disease research community. I wonder why they don't seize this opportunity to take a good hard look in the mirror and ask themselves, how could this happen? How could it be prevented in the future? And how does it affect our thinking about the role of oligomer forms of amyloid proteins in Alzheimer's disease?
Well, and Charles, let's talk a little bit more about those opportunity costs, because your article noted that millions and millions and millions of dollars in federal dollars has been directed to labs really pursuing that line of questioning. And other researchers say that their work was overlooked. They kind of referred to it as the amyloid mafia. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Sure. This has been going on for a very long time. It's not by no means due solely or largely to the Ash-Lesney paper, but there has been a dominance of the amyloid hypothesis in the research community that I'm sure Dr. Espe could speak to as well. It's not to the complete exclusion of other ideas, of course, but there have been a lot of researchers who have found that unless they focus their efforts on amyloid-related studies, that their Alzheimer's work might not be very favored for funding. And consequently, there's a lot of, as you say, opportunity costs, things that didn't get done because of the shift in funding. Now, when this study, the STAR 56 study by Lesney Nash, came out in 2006, suddenly we had a gigantic increase in NIH funding. That's the National Institutes of Health, the main funder of biomedical research from the government. A great increase in funding for these so-called oligomer studies related to Alzheimer's. It's been funded just in the last year, $287 million. So you're talking about gigantic, gigantic shift in funding to that area of research. Even more funding, billions of dollars, have been put in by pharma companies to try to come up with drugs that would attack these oligomer targets for Alzheimer's disease. But I think, as Dr. Espe said, I think quite correctly, that in study after study, drug after drug, year after year, for decades, targeting amyloids, targeting amyloid oligomers, has not resulted in an improvement in the symptoms of Alzheimer's, has not resulted in a drug that can prevent Alzheimer's. I'm not saying that these studies and these ideas are useless. I'm not saying that they have no merit. There are many people who I respect who think that this kind of exploration should still continue. But the question is whether it should continue to the exclusion of other studies.
Mm. So, Dr. Espe, what do you think is the impact of this for people with Alzheimer's and their families? I mean, so many families have been investing hope in treatments like Aduhelm and these other treatments that are based on this theory. What's the impact for them?
Well, I hope that they will exert some pressure on our field. Now, I'm a neurologist, and I like to think the brain is very complex, for sure. But the biology in the brain follows the same rules than other body parts. And in other fields of medicine, physicians involved in research would have a hypothesis, and the highest level of testing of a hypothesis is a clinical trial. If the trial is positive, if it's confirmed that the intervention is indeed favorable, that favors a hypothesis, the hypothesis is confirmed. If it's negative, the hypothesis should be rejected, and that is what other fields of medicine do. We in neurology tend not to. In fact, in the field of Alzheimer's, we have never rejected a hypothesis. As funny as that sounds, it is an indictment of our field. It reflects a perception that we know the truth, and if the trials were perfect, we would have already gotten the answer that we all along have known to be there. So how I think patients could help drive these changes to get onto this particular development and ask the field of neurologists working and neuroscientists working in Alzheimer's the tough questions of why is it that we cannot reject a false hypothesis. Hypotheses are scientific ideas and by definition are falsifiable. And we should be able to falsify an idea that isn't true, so that then we can move to ideas that will be true. And I think that the implication for patients is that it's good to have hope, but it's good to have hope that is rational, that is based on scientific facts. Now, the what this is all teaching us is that the proteins in the brain are really becoming depleted, and we have overlooked that. We have overlooked the fact that we're losing proteins, and those proteins are important for many functions, and that perhaps in the future we will finally refute the hypothesis that amyloid is toxic once it builds into plaques, and begin to think about how we can improve the proteins that are becoming depleted, how we can replenish the levels of those proteins. We cannot move in that direction until we finally falsify the hypothesis that we've been using as driver for research and future therapies for patients with Alzheimer's disease.
Well, and we do have, we're running out of time, but we have a call, a very good question from a listener named Larry. He asks, why weren't these issues identified by people who peer-reviewed the research? Charles, do you have any thoughts on that real quick?
Sure. Happy to answer that question. I think the peer review process, as important as it is deeply flawed. A lot of the peer reviewers don't have the skill or the understanding of the importance of evaluating original images, again, images submitted for publication. So that's one. The second is that other systems have broken down in this and many other cases. The journals that publish these papers, many of them do not have a routine way of checking the correctness of images that are submitted. It's not rocket science. These are very sophisticated entities that have the ability to check these images. And I should say, finally, the universities and the senior investigators at the universities also bear a responsibility to ensure that the work of people working under them is correct, well-constituted, and reliable. Multiple breakdowns, but nothing that can't be solved. This shows that the scientific community knows how to do self-policing, as Matthew Schrag has shown with his, I think, quite courageous efforts. Things can be done. It just, they need to be done more routinely and more often.
I've been talking with Science Magazine investigative journalist Charles Piller and University of Cincinnati professor of neurology, Dr. Alberto Espe. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you very much. Lucy.
Up next, we'll talk about the high level of job vacancies at Greater Cincinnati healthcare institutions. This is Cincinnati Edition.